Blog Talk Radio.
Imagination and Invention with Simon Rose Show at BTR's World of Ink Network. Be prepared to call in later and chat with Simon Rose and his guests, Janice and Tom Shuffleman, right here at BTR's World of Ink Network, Inspiration, Imagination, and Invention with Simon Rose. Your host, Simon Rose, is an author of science fiction and fantasy novels for middle grade readers. He has also written a number of nonfiction titles for children and offers author-in-residency programs. It's 9 p.m. Eastern Time on June 8, 2011. As always, Inspiration, Imagination, Invention with Simon Rose can be listened to live here at blogtalkradio.com, World of Ink Network, or you can listen to us anytime on demand at the same address or on iTunes. Just search for World of Ink Network and you'll find a list of our shows. We'll be taking your calls today towards the end of the show, and if you'd like to call in and ask questions of our guest or our host, the phone number to call is 714-242-5259. Again, that's 714-242-5259.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Virginia. My name is Simon Rose, and welcome once again to Inspiration, Imagination, and Invention. Yes, all those three things. And today we have two guests this time around. We have Janice and Tom Shuffleman. How are you two doing this evening?
We're fine.
We're fine.
And now you're in where? You're in Austin, I think, right?
Austin, Texas.
And it's very hot there, apparently. You've got the air conditioners going, and it's really warm, is it?
It's really warm. Triple digit.
Oh, wow. Triple digits. My goodness me. Well, that's
yes,
amazing.
It's very unusual for this time of year, but I don't know if it's El Nino or something worse.
Or are we humans spoiling the world?
It could be the humans spoiling the world again. I'll just tell the listener a little bit about you. Janice and Tom, they're an author-illustrator couple, actually. We've probably spoken, well, I've met before people who've worked together before with say, the same illustrator on and off in different books and things. But these Janice and Tom are an author-illustrator couple, actually. They live in Austin, as we said before. They work together to create books for children of all ages. Their particular sort of specialty, really, I guess, is to write and illustrate books that bring the past alive, which made them a great fit for our show here all about historical fiction and everything. The latest, well, they've been quite a few books, actually, which we'll get to throughout the course of this little show here, but their latest collaboration is a picture book biography entitled I, Vivaldi, which is written as if by the famous composer himself, and poor Tom and Janice, it actually involved researching by staying in Venice for a long time, a long period of time. What a terrible thing to have to do. That's Venice in Italy, of course. Living in the very square where Vivaldi's childhood home still stands, and of course they were studying the, well, not only soaking up the atmosphere of Venice, of course, but also studying the paintings and the art and everything by the, you know, the artists of the time in the late 17th and early 18th centuries. Their books have won many awards, among them the New York Public Library Best Book Award for the Teen Age, Texas Blue Bonnet Award Master List, Reading Rainbow Book, Children's Book Council Notable Book, and the International Reading Association Children's Choices. And, of course, I will mention their website, because everyone has one these days. You can find out all about them and their work at ShuffelmanBooks.com. That's Shuffelman, ShuffelmanBooks.com. So I should actually just, I did sort of joke a little bit there about the Venice thing, but I was just sort of curious about that. You traveled all the way to Italy. How long were you actually in Venice for? And when was that? When were you in Venice?
Well, we've been several times. Let's see, the most recent was in 2005, I think. And our longest stay was 2 weeks when we lived in the square where Vivaldi grew up and played with other children or tried to.
Wow.
In the square. It's
and is the is the house is the house a museum now and everything where he lived? I suppose
no,
it would be,
it's
right?
No, it's not. It's a private home, and we were not able to get into it. But it's on the square of San Giovanni di Bragora, which is off the tourist beaten path. It's fairly big, but it's a very much of a neighborhood, and all the
mm-hmm.
people that live around it come out and congregate in the square. There is an old palazzo, a palace there, which is now La Residenza, which is where we stayed.
Mm-hmm.
And the church of San Giovanni di Bragora.
No, I have been there a couple of times myself, but I apart from the main tourist.
Yes. Well, we did all the tourist things too, but this makes it. Site researching is just about my favorite, and it just brings so many ideas. We got so familiar with it, and besides, it looks almost exactly like it did when Antonio Vivaldi lived there, which was very helpful. And we almost felt like we would see him come out and play in the square. So, yes, site research is an inspiration. And we do it before, during, and during creating the book. So... Tom, do you want to say? Oh, Tom went out and there were boys playing kickball in the square, and so Tom went out and kicked the ball with them. So in our book there is a scene where Antonio tries to play with the other boys, but
he had serious breathing problems.
Yes, he was born with, I guess it was asthma. They don't know for sure. It's called a chest constriction at the time, and so he couldn't run and play, which was one of the reasons that he became such a good violinist. He stayed indoors, and his father taught him to play the violin. Are you there, Simon?
Did we lose Simon? Simon, are you still there? Oh, my goodness. Well, I show... Hold on, let me bring him... Oh, here we go. Hold on. Simon, did we lose you? Simon?
Hello?
Hello, we lost you. Sorry, everybody, we lost Simon for a second. You're back.
I am, yes. I don't know what happened there. It must be the Canadian atmosphere or something like that.
Losing our host, not good.
But were you Simon?
So where did we get to with our chat about Vivaldi there?
Well, we were back to Tom playing kickball in the square with the other boys.
Right, yes. So this was something you, have you always been interested in Vivaldi or in Italy in general, or was it just...
No, not always, but what really started it was that we are passionate lovers of his music, and we began to wonder... what he was like and where he lived.
Yes.
And just started from his music. And then, we had already been to Venice, and it was our favorite city in the world, so it seemed inevitable that we'd write the book.
Well, I participated in a watercolor painting workshop in Lucca. And right after that, we came down, after that was over, we came down to Venice.
We went over.
Yeah, went over.
Over, not down.
Yeah, over.
I think what people always say with kids' books, and I think I've mentioned this to kids sometimes at schools, and I've done school visits, mostly with the sort of older kids in grades 5 and 6, and really, rather than the younger ones, when I say, well, when people say to write what you know, people get confused with that. They think, well, okay, well, nobody knows how to travel in time or go to other dimensions and things. Well, no, of course not. But the thing is, it's a case of writing what you know, what you're interested in, what's your passion and things. It's far more interesting to write a book about something that you really are interested in. Like, if you were interested in the music.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah,
exactly.
If you're interested in the music of Vivaldi, then yeah, that, and I found it fascinating over the years to actually look into that too. And I think, okay, well, obviously Vivaldi did not sit around composing music all the time. He had a life, but obviously, what was he like? You know, what was he like as a person? Because obviously, and same with Mozart or any of these other composers or writers or poets. It's always fascinating, really, to look
and
into what they might have been like.
And we know much more about Mozart than we do about Vivaldi, because in Venice, there were very strict rules of behavior in Vivaldi's time, and people kept their lives private. And so he didn't write letters. He didn't leave any record. So a lot of we had to just fill in between the lines.
Well, I've seen it before with some people. If you research some people, even to this day, there are some people who ordered their family to, you know, burn all their papers and diaries and things when they died and things. Some writers and artists and politicians and things, and so we know very little about them. But when did this book come out, the Vivaldi one?
This was 2008.
2008. Okay. When did you first start this wonderful thing? And I noticed on the site, sort of leap around here, but on your website there are some other books you've done which you've not always worked together on these books. I mean, Janice, you've done some books that have had other illustrators, right?
Only one.
Okay. Right.
And that's the newest one, Anna Maria's Gift, and that's a book from Random House, and they had their own illustrator. And
but that's also got a Vivaldi theme to that too, isn't it?
It does. In fact, it grew out of our research for Vivaldi, because he became a priest and he taught orphan girls in an orphanage in Venice, and orphans always make a good story, so I thought I'm going to write a story about one of his students. So, you know, one book leads to another very often.
Well, quite often it does. I mean, I remember with my, I didn't think I was all that interested in that sort of medieval time period. I did a book called The Sorcerer's Letterbox in 2004, and I always felt that I'd got another book in me about a similar time period, and a few years later I did another book about the time of the Black Death and things, because I was suddenly in, but I wouldn't do it. I might be ready to do another one about medieval stuff at some point, but maybe I've immersed myself in it a bit, you know, too much for now. But so how did you what sort of started you out on this then, like working together? I mean, how did it all begin?
Okay, it all began on our honeymoon.
On our honeymoon.
I know it was a very strange honeymoon. We met in Aspen, Colorado, when we were both skiing, and there we watched a film of some men trying to climb the mountain K2 in the Himalayas, and we really wanted. We decided then that we're going to see the world too, and we're going to climb in the Himalayas, and that led to selling all our possessions, asking for money instead of wedding gifts, and we started off around the world for a year with very little money. I think $3,000, and it lasted. We travel by freighter and bus and train and ox cart and every way imaginable.
And this started
and
you
while
off
we
thinking
were,
you would work together as writers and illustrators?
Right.
Or?
No, well, while we were traveling, a newspaper reporter came to talk to us. And
In Japan.
In Tokyo. And he named us the Honeymoon Hobos. And the newspaper, the Asahi Shimbun, asked if we would write articles and Tom illustrate them for the newspaper. So
now, Tom, had you been an illustrator before for quite a while before that then, Tom? Or?
Not really. I've been doing a lot of course, I was a practicing architect, too.
Right, and, I read that on the site, yeah.
those were the good old days when you designed with a paintbrush and a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, I had that, and plus the fact that I did some artwork too, but never really illustrating any books at
mm-hmm.
that time.
Well, tell who started you.
Well, I grew up loving to draw as a little child, influenced and encouraged by my singer, painter mother, and also our family connection with sculptor Alexander Fimister Proctor, who would come across the street in Seattle and give me lessons in drawing and clay work and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite subjects were humans, horses, soldiers, and airplanes at the time when I was a little kid.
Right.
So that was, I guess, that's, so I was always encouraged in that direction. Plus the fact that living in damp and rainy Seattle, growing up there, was sinus and asthma. Sounds like Antonio Vivaldi.
Yeah.
My therapy was to stay indoors and draw.
Right. And, yeah.
Also, in school, I had teachers who encouraged me to illustrate my reports rather than draw behind the scenes and interrupt the classes. And
but none of this was involving children's books and things back then, of course.
That wasn't. Well, I was illustrating my reports.
I suppose so. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I did one. I remember one that was. Who was the famous world traveler?
Ta-ta-ta.
Ta-ta-ta.
It'll come.
Anyway. So, and of course, they got me to design posters and help decorate the school for festivities such as Christmas, Thanksgiving, and Halloween. And I was also influenced by the gifts my mother would give me and father, like children's classics such as Treasure Island, illustrated by N.C. Wyeth.
Right. So a lot of those were illustrated at the time, yeah, some of those older ones, yeah.
Yeah, well,
but I suppose, like most of us back then, you probably never thought that, oh, well, I'll be doing this full-time or as a job or as a career or something one day. I don't suppose it probably never even crossed your mind.
Well, my father was a lawyer, and he hated the idea that I was going to grow up being a poor artiste. But I got inspired to become an architect by various sources. And that made him feel comfortable because it was a profession. And
right.
I entered into architecture school at UT and University of Texas, then later at Harvard, when the doorway into architectural design was by way of drawing and painting by hand.
Right.
So through architecture, I was able to make a living out of my art, I guess you'd call it, until...
So we met
Janice, and we got into writing books.
So that was your first collaboration, was when you were in Japan then, on honeymoon, of all things.
Right, but we didn't know that it was going to lead to children's books.
That was your first thing out there. Yeah, wow. So,
right.
So what's the latest thing? What are you working on right now? Vivaldi was a couple of years ago, I guess, now. So what's the latest thing that you're doing?
Well, we have one that's, it's I, Papa Haydn. So it would be a follow-up to I, Vivaldi, and it's about Franz Joseph Haydn. Another picture book biography, and it's being submitted right now. I don't know where it's going.
That justifies.
But it's completed. It's right now. It's out there. Then at the moment.
Yeah.
It's out there. It's not complete. It's out there in dummy form with
mm-hmm.
Tom sketches
and with the three sample watercolor pages.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, I think that's the way you've got to do it. I mean, I know that I draw silly pictures when I'm on school visits to entertain children and things, but I don't. I would never contemplate illustrating a book. But I've been. It's about probably 3 years ago now. Maybe more actually. Got together with a local illustrator here and said, well, would you be interested in collaborating on something? Because I liked her art, and I gave her three stories to look at, and she liked one of them and said, well, let's do that. And I actually have a book dummy here that she's done up. We've sent it around. It's done the rounds once of publishers, and we got a couple of responses that were actually reasonably encouraging, but the rest were just the usual response from publishers. But it's a book dummy from, you know, an illustrator and a writer working together, which is not very often that people get those, I don't suppose. But
more difficult to get it published that way,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
To give you heart, I would tell you that Vivaldi went to 150 publishers.
Well, this went out to about, I think, 20, I think, last time around, and then it's because she's obviously a working illustrator, and I've got things to do as well, but it was, I think, around just before Christmas time. I said, you know, we should give it another go, and so we're going to put it out again probably this summer and things and see if it can get anywhere. I think it'll get published and picked up eventually, but there's no real rush, you know.
Right. Well, I didn't personally send it to 150 different publishers, but I had an agent who did, sent a lot out at the same time. But sometimes I would get letters telling me a critique, in other words. And so we changed things. And so in
well,
the
that's
process,
always good, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In
it's
the
like
process
free, it's
of
like free
rejection,
professional advice.
In the process of rejections, it got better.
Well, that's right. I think I wrote an article about rejection. One of the things in one of the parts of that article was, I think I called it positive rejection. That's why, because everybody thinks, oh, they've rejected me as a person or me as an artist. But no, they've rejected your particular piece of work, and if you're lucky, you might get some yellow stickies, or even better, like a little critique on it. And it's free advice.
You can
take the advice or not. It's up to you. But you've got nice advice from a professional, haven't you?
Yeah.
we think exactly alike. I did a blog called Good and Bad Rejections.
This was all about, you know, it was basically trying to. It's on e-zines somewhere. And it's been on my blog quite a few times. It's all about people who just that word rejection is like everything in your life's been rejected. No, it hasn't. They've rejected your particular piece of work. That's all it is. I mean, and especially
exactly
with
right.
say with Tom's stuff. I mean, with artwork, I think with visuals of any kind, it's you can look at something and you can immediately either like or dislike it. Sometimes with written work, you might have to look at it over and over again. But they're not rejecting you as a person. They don't hate you and think you should be murdered or anything. I mean, they just don't like your book, you know.
It just
try
comes
something
with
else.
The territory rejection. If you're going to be an author or an illustrator, get used to it. And use it.
I have to ask a quick, just something that sprang to mind just now, because people have asked me this question before, and I don't do picture books, apart from this particular one I've been working on. Some people, I do classes for adults and things at the local university sometimes, and people who are wanting to write kids' books, if they're coming into it fresh and they don't really know what, they're mostly looking at picture books for younger readers because they're grandparents or whatever, some new grandparents or something similar. And they often say, well, how can you send in a book? You've written a great story, and you send it in to a publisher, and if you're lucky, they're going to assign a illustrator to work with you on your book, and they say, well, what if you don't like the pictures? And I think, well, yes, that's a good question. What if you don't like the pictures? I suppose you could refuse to sign the contract, and then you'd never get the book published, right?
Right. Well,
but I mean, if you work with an illustrator, I think like in your case, you work together and submit work together, and you obviously you have a couple and everything. And I think it's much easier that way. I'm not sure how it works.
I think it's much easier to just submit the manuscript and have an illustrator assigned to it, because when it goes there as a team, if they don't like one or the other, then it gets rejected.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. But as I pointed out to my collaborator here, though, our plan really is if they like my story but hate her artwork, then I am in with that book. And if it's the other way around, they love her artwork and hate my story, then she might have work for years and years and years with that publisher who would never have heard of her otherwise. And then, of course, if they like the two people together, then we have to be prepared to produce quite a few books. But I think in your case, it must be nice, though, to know that you can write the book and then look over someone's shoulder, as it is, there's that picture on your website, and see your words being put into pictures as you really want them to be.
And make comments.
Janice makes comments with little
yellow
sticky tabs.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you guys about that, because I know another author and writer team that, they've collaborated on a few picture books together, and they did it as newlyweds as well, and, it sounds like you guys have a good rapport, so it sounds like you guys go along, but I do know that there are times that Kevin, the illustrator, would sit there and say, there's times where he would do an illustration and his wife didn't like it. He'd come in the bathroom to, get ready for the day, and she'd have it sitting in the sink with the sink filled up with water to let him know she absolutely hated the sketch because he kept insisting that he wanted to do it and stuff. So, that was just kind of, just them being funny with each other. And it wasn't his original. She'd make, a photocopy of it. But, just to kind of, stress her, no, I don't like this one. This needs to go to the bottom of the ocean kind of thing. And so when you guys were working together, was there any time that you guys, it sounds like you guys are pretty like-minded, but were there any times that you guys didn't agree on the collaboration?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Well, you see, Tom is often at his office, and I choose his architectural office, and so I choose that time to really study whatever it is he's doing alone. And then I leave little yellow sticky tabs with comments on them. I love this. Can you do this?
Or read the text, dummy.
I hate books that where the illustration doesn't mirror the text. It doesn't. There's something wrong with the picture. I can tell you an instance in Vivaldi. There is a scene in which he has just been outside trying to play with the boys, and he can't run, and so his mother calls him in. I've told you not to run. God never meant you to run, and he says, you're promised to the priesthood, and he's angry because he wants to be a violinist, and he stomps upstairs to play his violin and play out his anger, and Tom made him look sad, and so I left a note saying, he's angry. Read the text.
Which would be a different face. It'd be a different face, wouldn't it? Really.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we work it out. We're going back and forth. If you have someone in Maine doing your illustrations, and the publisher does not let you directly connect with them, which is often the case,
mm-hmm.
you don't know what's... You have no say in it. Not much. Anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's nice to be... I'm not being a picture book person, really. I'm dabbling in it, I suppose, a little bit. It's very nice for me to be part of it. I mean, I just gave my colleague the story, knowing it was a story that was far too long for a 24-page picture book, and so I gave her carte blanche to to slash and burn the text to make it fit the pictures and things, and then she did the pictures.
Uh-huh.
Well, the thing is, it was too long for a picture book.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's you know, it's I like it. Otherwise, it wouldn't have got to the stage it's at. And there's another one we're going to work on after this if it's successful. It's just a case of finding the time to do it. You said the Haydn one is doing the rounds, of course. What do you have some? Are you going to stick with composers after that, or not?
Oh no, you want to know what all the other projects are? Well, I like to.
Well,
they're
just curious. I mean, I'm just obviously. Yes. Obviously, you've just answered one question that you're not going to stick with composers. So, presumably,
right.
Are they always going to be artists?
No. I like to keep several projects going at the same time, hopefully, at different stages and different genres. So, I also write historical novels, and
right.
I have one now that's called Ariadne's Choice that's in the submission stage, and this is based on the Greek myth of the Minotaur, and it takes place in Knossos, where we were fortunate enough to make another one of our visits to research. I choose the most exotic places.
That's an awful place again to have to go. Wow, dear me.
Yeah. Yes, we even took the night ferry from Athens to Crete, which
mm-hmm.
is the romantic way to get there.
I would think so. Yes, well, I suppose you can fly. I would imagine, but that's in the submission stage. So are you both sort of interested in history, or is it mostly you, Janice, and then sort of Tom's tagged along with that as the illustrator, or are you both very interested in history?
I think we both are.
I was always interested,
yeah,
like
right.
you know the Treasure Island book. To see, I was.
Oh yeah, right, yeah.
I got that as a present when I was probably about 10 years old.
But you read H.G. Wells' Outline of History when you were about 10 years old.
That's right.
Yeah, and then he read the whole 12 volumes of Will Durant's History of Civilization, and. So we're both interested in the past, and I think really I like to write about it because I don't understand the present. I don't know what's happening, but I can read.
Well, I don't think any of it. I don't think any of us do. Sometimes it can be hard to understand them, and sometimes the future is a bit too worrying to think about as well. So
yeah.
But yeah, it's. No, I was just curious because obviously I write about the past quite a lot, but I do science fiction and fantasy type stuff as well. But I've done some historical, probably four of them at least have historical, four of the six have historical elements to them. And that was my major at university was history, so it's not really.
Oh, that's what I read. Yes.
Yeah. Well, people ask at schools and things, they say, well, they ask about research, you know, and things about research, and I have to try and explain. It's hard to explain, hard for me to explain to them that if you've always been interested in it, as you two have, if you've always been interested in history and you've read a lot about it, and I'm looking at bookshelves of things here filled with books that I've had for many years, all about different historical periods. If I think, I'll set a story in 1349 at the time of the Black Death, I don't have to go to a book and think what was happening at that time, or what did people wear, or what was the way of life, because I know that. I mean, you have to be careful not to tell people that, I know everything, because I don't. I have to do research, of course, into mostly things like everyday life and clothing and things, but not the political events at the time. And I know that, you know, they didn't have cars in 1349 and electricity. whereas other people, some people are starting from scratch with say a book about the Victorian era or even World War II or something like that. So it's research is. Sometimes you can get really lost in the research, of course, but I don't get to travel to exotic locations for mine, of course, unlike some people.
Well, you do what you have to do, Simon.
I know. I'd love to, actually. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, my historical ones were set in England and medieval England, and that wasn't something I needed to go and travel to do because I used to reside there and everything. So, you've been to Crete and obviously to Venice, and of course you travelled around a lot when you were just on your honeymoon as well, right?
Yeah. Right, for a year.
Everything's for kids though, right? All your books are for kids. Nothing for adults. You haven't dabbled in books for adults.
Well, we have one coming out in September called honeymoon hobos, and
we used
all the articles. I mean, we referred back to articles and letters we wrote at the time. So, and I pieced all this together. So we have our feelings and what our experiences written down at the time, and so now it's coming out in September. Honeymoon Hobos. That's our first book for grown-ups.
Well, and anything, do you do, because you've done all this research, I think, I'm just wondering, because, again, I've dabbled in recent years in non-fiction books. Do you do anything, have you written any non-fiction, like historical-related non-fiction?
No, not really. I really prefer fiction. I mean, some people call our Vivaldi non-fiction, because it is a biography, but it is fictionalized, you know. So I don't.
Yes, of course it is. Yeah, I mean, it's like the famous movie about Amadeus. I mean, people forget that it was basically a movie adaptation of a play about Mozart. It wasn't a movie adaptation about his life. It was it was based on a play, wasn't it? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but I think Vivaldi is closer to fact than that was. Yeah. I mean, I love that movie.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah, I was aware that I've seen the movie many times. It's a great movie and everything, but it was based, rather than being based on, say, a big chunky, you know, biography that somebody had written based on his actual letters and things, it was an adaptation of a stage play, which was written from a fictionalized account of his life. You know, really, that was what it was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, you're doing lots of research and things. So, the ideas come from, you just suddenly decide that you're going to do a book on Haydn or something?
Well,
you just get your ideas from...
Well, Vivaldi led to that. I mean, he's another one of our favorite composers, but definitely Vivaldi led to that. And the idea of writing from the person, as if I were that person, came from I, Claudius.
Really?
I was so fascinated with that book, and so I thought, why not do it for children, you know, and write as if I'm that person, and I found it exhilarating.
it's not something you see as often now, and of course that's a very interesting thing, because I, Claudius, is something that I have waded through I think once when I was younger, but I have seen the TV adaptation of those books. I wouldn't even like to count how many times I've seen those. And how familiar I am with that adaptation of that. So it's very interesting. Well, it still stands the test of time. It's quite surprising, because it was made in 1976, I think. It's a long time ago now. But, that's interesting. So the Haydn one is done from the same point of view, is it? Wow.
I, Papa Haydn.
Yeah. And it really breaks our heart to have to take several trips to Vienna.
Oh, yes.
oh, dear me. You do have to go to some awful place. Have you thought about writing a book, you know, based on something in the South Pacific or something like that, maybe?
I'm not a beach person.
I notice you don't seem to have written any books set in Greenland or anything like that, where you have to go there, or Antarctica. I noticed that. Yes.
That's
somewhere nice.
I'm thinking of ancient Egypt right now, researching. I just got this new book by this wonderful author, Toby Wilkinson. It's called The Rise and Fall of Ancient Egypt, and I'm totally enthralled.
Now, the other thing I noticed on your site, too, you've got this, you'd mentioned this this Anna Maria's Gift thing, which grew out of, I guess, the Vivaldi one, but I noticed there's this thing, there's the one about, is it Sophie's War, I think it's called, about German Texans in the Civil War.
Yes, that's a very little-known story.
It's a very specialized sort of topic, yes.
Yeah, I have German heritage, and my father was a German professor. And I, so my very first book, A Paradise Called Texas, was based on my ancestors coming to Texas from Germany in 1845. But my
I've got that one too, yeah.
Yeah, my ancestors were all peasants. But when I was researching, doing more research, I learned that there was another group of Germans who came over a little later in 1850s that were highly educated, and they were rebelling against the authorities.
Against the, yeah, against the...
Against the ruler in Germany.
They were free thinkers, and they were unionists during the Civil War, which was a deadly thing to be in Texas at that time.
It's really a remarkable story about this group of Germans living in Texas during the Civil War who were unionists, and they were persecuted. Their cabins were burned. The men were hanged. And at one point, I mean, they would try to escape and go through New Orleans and up and join the Union Army, which many of them did. So,
and this wouldn't have involved traveling to exotic locations for research.
No,
this would have been just in...
No, but it was... But I did stay in Comfort, Texas for a considerable length of time, and that was lovely. You know, I just...
And that was in Comfort, of course. You stayed in Comfort.
In Comfort, yes.
Yeah, it was a lovely little town. It is a lovely little town.
And this was the place where the free thinkers settled, and a group of Germans from there finally decided to leave, and it was found out, and they were massacred on the Nueces River.
Oh.
And so that is the kernel of my story.
Wow. So you've also Sophie's
father was one of those, and her war is trying to save her father.
And also some books as well on the website I've noticed here about Native American cultures as well.
Well, and I got into that because when my ancestors came here, there were Comanches living here who didn't like the fact that they were being invaded. And so I began to see, well, there is certainly another side of this story. And I wrote several books from that side of the story.
And another one as well. I know on the site too. I noticed there's also this book, A Peddler's Dream, which is about Lebanese immigrants.
Yes, well, that's because we lived in a neighborhood here in Austin where there were several Lebanese families descended from the immigrants, and they would tell us these stories. And I noticed that all the Lebanese were extremely successful, and I began to wonder, how is that? Why is that? And so I asked questions and did research, and we came up with this story. It's because they work hard. They work
hard. You've certainly done an awful lot of... it's like we said earlier about writing what you know. I mean, if you weren't interested in this, you could never have written these books. It would seem far too much like hard work. If you weren't interested enough in these books, you would never have been able to complete them.
Right, and as you say, passionately interested.
Yeah.
Yes, I think I've that rule is write what you know can be so misinterpreted, because you can learn what you don't know if you want to, and write.
Yes, I mean I've said that before about I think maybe I'm in the last show I might have mentioned that I would probably never write a book that involved a long ocean voyage. Because I would have to learn about ropes and rigging and sails and things, which I don't have any interest in.
Yes.
And plus, of course, if I had a boy and a girl who were kidnapped by pirates or something and taken across the Atlantic with Columbus or something, my book would basically be, and suddenly they were thrown into the hold of the ship. 3 months later, they arrived in the New World. Because, as I've said to people in schools before, what there is to see in the middle of the Atlantic? The sea. There's nothing else to see, really. I mean, I'd have to learn about ropes and rigging. And same thing with, for these sports stories and things, I wouldn't be interested so much in sports stories. History I like and other things. And if you're writing about something that you're interested in, as you are, and obviously drawing about the things that you're interested in, then obviously, yeah, it's much easier to do. It's more fun, and it's less like work.
You bet.
Exactly.
Well, there is work. Of course, there's... there's work involved, of course, because obviously you have to do the editing and things. Sorry, Virginia, yes.
Oh, I was going to say that we have a... I'm here. We have a... Can you hear me? Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you, yes.
Okay, can hear me. We have a question from the chat room from George. He wants to know if you guys have ever thought about having your books turned in instead of just being offered as print books, but also offered as e-books.
Well, I do. Anna Maria's Gift is an e-book. I don't know about the others. I'm perfectly happy for them to be. It's not something that I personally do, though. The publisher does it.
Yeah, I'm perfectly happy to have mine done as a user. I've been talking to the publisher only yesterday about the e-book, the whole e-book thing, and it's not something that needs to be done like tomorrow, but it's not something I'm ignoring or something. But yeah, I'm happy for mine to become e-books too. I mean, with picture books, it's sort of a bit, things are still a bit, or books with pictures in, I should say, illustrated books, it's still a bit more confusing as to how that's going to work, I think.
Well, I thought, I mean, but the books with... it's going to happen eventually, of course, and I'm happy.
Oh yeah, no point ignoring it.
However you want to read my book, whether it's an e-book or a book, whatever. But I did see Winnie the Pooh on some. I don't have an iPad, but a friend showed me that was a free book on his iPad, and it had the original Ernest Shepherd illustrations. Those beautiful line drawings, and I was so impressed. So it will come for full color picture.
Oh, it'll come. I think some people are worried about it, and other people say that, oh yes, people will always want to have a book and things like that. And I think, yeah, they might do, but people said that about vinyl, and they said that about CDs as well. And I think some people may always want to have a book, but I mean, e-books will come, and they're not going to go away. They will. Whether they'll take over completely from books or not, I don't know. 1,000 years from now, who can say what's going to happen? Or even
right,
50
exactly.
Years. It's hard
you
to
think
say.
They were afraid when they were reading scrolls when books came along, but you know.
Well, that's what Claudius was writing on, isn't it? He was writing on scrolls.
Yeah.
All those years ago in ancient Rome. Yes.
Right.
But yeah, one thing I had a question here on this, because I know that my colleague and I, who are working on this picture book, had talked about doing stuff together, because she does classes on drawing and illustrating at schools, and I do my own thing with books and writing and things. Now, do you two visit schools and talk to kids about writing?
We just did one in Spring, Texas, which is a suburb of Houston.
And you do it together? You do it together, though, as a team?
We did. I did one presentation for older kids, and then we did one for the younger ones, in which Tom drew for them. But
I
don't think we've really...
I gave the kids a gesture drawing exercise in a bucking horse.
Oh, yeah, no, I was just curious how it would work, because obviously we've been asking you how does it work with the process of writing and illustrating as a team and everything. Obviously that's at home in your studio and over the course of many months and this sort of thing. I'm just wondering, you know, because I'm thinking I'd like to be able to work on that and try and find out if we ever get our book published. It'd be nice if we could go to a school and show people this is how an author and illustrator work together. I think it'd be quite a unique thing, because not many people do that. It's either one or the other, you know.
Well, we do the slideshow that shows the process of both writing and illustrating.
Right.
So Tom's drawing is a little short drawing lesson is just a follow-up, but we have showed them visually how it works. So you could put together something like that.
Yeah, well, yeah. I was just curious, obviously, because a lot of us writers and authors and things, and illustrators, we do visit schools and things all the time and teach and tutor or whatever you want to call it. But I've never seen anyone do it all, you know, together as a team and like a tag team type presentation. Yeah, it must be quite difficult, really.
Well, I don't think we've perfected it by any means, but.
No. Sorry, Virginia, you had a question there.
Yeah, we have another question from the chat room again from George.
Yeah, by all means, yeah.
Yeah, he asked how many picture books you can have in an e-book, and I know typically e-books, you know, are converted from a print book, but Janice, you had mentioned that one of your books is a picture which is already in ebook format. So can you maybe expand on what it was like just working on an ebook specifically and what that was involved with that?
Well, I didn't work on an ebook. The publisher turned it into an ebook, and this is not a picture book. Anna Maria's Gift is what's called in the trade a chapter book. It has illustrations, but not full color. They're black and white drawings. So I had nothing to do with turning it into an ebook. The publisher did that. And I really don't know anything about it, except that there it is.
Yeah, I think it's mostly something that people who specialize in these things can do. But as far as I can, I haven't looked into it myself particularly, but I do know other authors who have, with the publisher's permission all the time, unless they're self-published, they have turned their books, and we're talking here about their professionally edited books that have already been published in print form. They're not just sticking any old blog entry in and turning it into a book. These have been transformed into e-books and put onto Amazon, and now they're for sale. And if you've already got the text, it's pretty straightforward, apparently, if you spend time studying the process. It's not that difficult.
I'm not sure what rights belong to whom as far as publishing it as an e-book online. I mean, the publisher has bought the rights, and I don't think at this point I have the right to put it on online myself.
Right. No, yeah, I mean it's something that I've been investigating for a while. I'm looking into it all the time, but I'm a bit too busy to look into it, you know, as much as I would like to. But one day, you know, maybe all books will be e-books, and I am in this for the long haul, and I have 6 books right now, 2 more coming out, and I'll probably be doing this for quite some time. So at some point, I would like, you know, to know that my books are all still available and alive out there, and even if they're not in printed form, as you said, people can still read them on a screen somewhere. Yeah.
There is one thing. If a book goes out of print, the rights revert to the author, and then you can do whatever you want to with it. You can
put it online. That's right, and because books, to be honest, books do sort of, in some ways, on the computer screen of Amazon and everybody else, books do live forever in some ways anyway, because the cover's still there on Amazon and everywhere else online, but it can say, you know, unavailable book out of print or something, and there are no more, you know, hard copies of the book in the entire world. But of course, if there's an e-book, then it's right there. So, but
yeah,
it's something for the future. It's not something I'm worried about or ignoring or scared of or anything like that. I'm aware that it's something that's coming, and I'd like to stay on top of things as much as I can without being too much of a, you know, technical wizard.
Yeah.
And my concentration is really on coming up with the content, and I'm just happy for somebody to publish it, to put it online, whatever. I prefer to make the content rather than do.
Oh yeah, I mean the thing is, I spend a lot of time. I mean, one of those questions I've been asked that you may have been asked by Virginia in my first appearance on this show last month was something about, you know, how much, you know, these are one of the questions people sometimes ask. What's a typical writing day for you? Or and because I do all this marketing and promotion and trying to get my name out there, there isn't a typical writing day very often. And I'd rather be spending time on the content and writing the books and creating the fiction, you know, and the stories. It'd be great, but I have all this other stuff to do, which sometimes I can sit down in the morning and it'll get to, you know, you've not even looked at the clock and it's like mid-afternoon and you haven't, apart from to get more coffee or something, you haven't really noticed the time, and it's like I've done nothing but sit on here doing blog entries and answering emails and working on goodness knows what. And you've done nothing creative at all, apart from the blog entries perhaps, but nothing creative towards your actual book that somebody's wanting to publish, you know.
You have to do that first and then the other.
You could be right. So, Virginia, do you have any other... are we okay for time still, or are we getting close to the end here?
We have a couple more minutes. So,
well, do you have any questions for Tom and Janice, Virginia? Do you have any questions yourself? Or
You know, I hate to say it, but my 15-month-old was kind of being cranky, so I've been, like, sporadically listening because I've had to run away from the computer.
Shocking.
Otherwise, you'd have her screaming into the phone like she did on one of our shows before. So, but no, I mean, your guys' books sound really interesting. The one thing, I mean, because I did hop on at the beginning of the show and was looking at your blog, and I did look even, you know, days before Simon, you know, and I put the whole show program together. But I noticed that there's a picture of you, Janice, with your two sons. And so I know I had left when Simon had asked the question about school visits, but what has been the overall response from your sons and even from, like, kids within their, you know, within their peer group with you being authors and obviously seeing your guys' books and stuff? Because it's always kind of interesting to hear kids who are closer to you as an author, how they view it.
Oh, I couldn't hear you very well, but you want to know how our sons feel about what we do? Is that what you said?
Yeah, what your sons feel, and even, like, their friends and stuff.
Well, you realize they're grown up. They live in New York. That was an old picture, and I just put it in there to show my reading to them. But now they're grown up, and they love what we're doing, but it's not their thing.
And they're making movies.
But,
wow.
Are they going to make movies of your books?
I wish. Period movies are very difficult and expensive to make. You know, where costume and all that. So
I had that issue with one of my second book. I know that whenever we talked about that, The Sorcerer's Letterbox, with it being set in medieval England, the issue was location filming and costumes, and if it ever got picked up by anyone, it'd be expensive. It couldn't be made on the cheap, that's for sure, because
right.
There were scenes that were, you know, filmed, you know, obviously, it would need to be filmed outside with castles in the background and goodness knows what else, you know. So the historical stuff is always expensive as opposed to, you know, stuff set in the
right.
modern era, you know. But, yeah.
Well, I have hopes. I would love for one
of
them.
Oh, I always have hopes. Have any of these books been translated into other languages?
Yes. Vivaldi, strangely enough, is in a Korean edition.
One of my books was bought. My first one, they bought a Korean company bought the rights. Yeah.
Huh. I tell you, those Koreans are something else. They are really into classical music.
Hmm.
I mean, Western classical music, for that matter.
Yeah. A Korean version. Have you got a copy of the Korean version of the book?
I do, and it's posted on my blog as well. It's beautiful calligraphy.
Yes.
I've forgotten now, but they changed the title, which I don't know why. It's something about the red-haired violinist. You know, it wasn't I.
Well, sometimes it doesn't fit. I mean, I've known that with my. First book is entitled The Alchemist's Portrait, and when I was explaining that to some kids in a school, I said, well, they might change the title, and the CPU said, well, why would they do that? I said, well, you know, it might not translate correctly, and it might be called,
right.
the wizard's painting or something, or the
right.
the boy who traveled in time or something, for all I know, in Korean. I mean, I can't read Korean anyway, so, you know, I wouldn't know what it was saying, you know.
Well, we have a very good friends of a Korean family. As a matter of fact, the young girl who was 9 years old when Anna Maria's Gift came out played a Vivaldi piece on her violin for our book launch, and we presented them with this Korean edition as a gift for that. So
right.
There's books make wonderful connections.
They do, yes. I was actually doing. I did a book. I was at a book signing at one of the local bookstores at the weekend, and I made quite a few interesting connections with people and families and kids and all sorts of things. It's always and teachers. You know, it's always a great place to make connections.
Yeah.
And once the book is out there, it belongs to the reader. You know, and the reader connects with you, and it's very exciting. I think, especially writing for children, because they're so forthcoming
Ivy Valdi was only what three? When was he? 2 years ago, he said. 3 years ago.
Oh eight, yeah.
Oh eight. So you know the entire story. If anyone was to ask you the story, asked you a question about it, you would still know what the story was about. You haven't forgotten it.
Oh no, no, no! Of course not. No. How could I?
Because I think sometimes people ask me sometimes about only six. I mean, hundreds of books, only six. But sometimes in a school, you sort of dread that question when some child asks you, yeah, you know, in chapter six when he does this, 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 and this, and this other guy says that. What were you thinking?
No.
I have no idea. You know.
That's right, but that's a longer book. I mean, a longer book.
True, I
and
suppose, yeah,
with
yeah.
my first book, I think the readers know it better than I do. You know.
Yeah, well, that's it. They do sometimes. They've read it recently. I mean, the thing is, when I say to kids, you know, I haven't read my own books, and they think, well, you wrote them. I said, well, yes, but you write a book, and I remember the particular the fifth one, The Heretic's Tomb. I said, I think I read it 22 times in 1 week. And they said, wow. Yeah, it was on the screen. By the time I was reading it, you know, the 15th time, I was scanning it for typos and things, you know, or whatever, because that's what you're doing. And so I don't read them once they're printed. I probably should take them on a plane or something and read them one day. But as long as children enjoy them, that's what we do it for, isn't it?
Right. I love it when children know more than I do about it. I love that.
But I guess we're probably running out of time here, Virginia, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's also just well, letting you know that our time's up for the show. So
no, that's fine. I'd like to thank you to Janice and Tom Shuffleman for their time with us here today. I knew it would be a fascinating encounter here on the show, to be perfectly honest. Not disappointed at all. And, of course, this, I believe, Virginia, this is all recorded and archived and everything anyway, right?
Yes, it is, and I'm going to kind of go over everything right now. So, Janice and Tom, it's been great having you guys on the show. This is our second show with Simon as a host here on the World of Ink Network, so it's really exciting to have you guys be a part of the show. And just so our listeners know, if you want to learn more about Janice and Tom Shuffleman, you can find the link to their website in the description page of the show. But it's also www.shufflemanbooks.com. And just so our listeners know as well, we have the show for tomorrow, Thursday, was it June 10th? I'm like lost out. June 9th, sorry.
June 9th
was canceled.
Tomorrow, yes.
Yeah, June 9th. So the show for June 9th was canceled, so there won't be a show then. But the Friday show, the Writing Mama show with myself, V.S. Grenier, and my co-host, Marcia Cook, will be on June 10th at our 6 p.m. Eastern time. And again, thank you, Janice and Tom, for being on the show. And great show, Simon. You're a wonderful host, so we're glad to have you here with us here at you know, the World of Ink Network.
Well, I look forward to being back here again with my next show, which is taking place on July 6th, when I will be speaking with a fellow Canadian author, John Wilson, author of over 30 books in the historical vein, and we'll be chit-chatting about probably about war and soldiers and fighting and things like that, but also a lot about history and research and things with my fellow Canadian author. So over to you again, Virginia, and thanks a lot for having me here this evening.
That's right. So everybody have a great night, and we will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Follow me to the World of Ink.